Everybody ready to go? Good to see everybody. Appreciate everybody's cooperation, understanding. Regard to last week, it's fair to say I think all of our minds were elsewhere, and the last thing we were worried about was a draft and football. Before we get started on the football front, you know, just a prayer and a thought to the families of the victims and those directly affected by the events of last week. So I think all of us were impacted, you know, indirectly, but some more directly than others. Thoughts and prayers, I think, are still with everybody as we're recovering. And I think a debt of gratitude is certainly in order for the law enforcement officials of Boston, specifically Watertown, for their swift efforts last week, their painstaking efforts to reach a resolution, enable us to kind of get back to some degree of normalcy. It's a slow process. I think we're all working through it. But without their efforts, you know, we probably wouldn't even be standing here today having this press conference. So, you know, definitely a debt of gratitude and appreciation is in order for them. You know, I think it's been pretty neat to see the city of Boston respond to the events. This is a strong city. It's a hard-nosed city. It's a tough city. And the one thing about, I think, the people of Boston is we're going to fight and we're going to battle. And, you know, some of the efforts of people last week, you know, the first to respond are pretty heroic on that front. You know, sitting down here at Gillette Stadium, probably can't really understand the true impact that it had on people that were there alive. But, you know, I think that speaks to the city of Boston and what we're about. And, you know, so I think that's, you know, most appropriate for everybody here today. We do have a draft to get to here this week. Before we get that, just a quick congratulatory note to the Hall of Fame finalists last week, Coach Fairbanks, Teddy Bruschi, and Leon Gray. I mean, those are certainly worthy candidates. You know, Teddy probably, you know, more on a personal level, having been here essentially since I've been with the organization. So best of luck to them. Well-deserving, and we'll see how that works out. As it pertains to the draft, I'd say most of the work is done. I think we're just at the stage, we're just compiling all the information that we do have, trying to get organized, and it's been a lot of hard work and a lot of efforts by a lot of people on a lot of different fronts, starting with the scouting staff and on the college scouting side, specifically with John Robinson and his staff. He does a really great job. Certainly appreciative for his efforts, but there's a lot of people that have put a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of effort into this endeavor. Hopefully we're prepared, and you know, we'll see how it unfolds Thursday night. And you know, get ready for the next part of the off season, if you will. So, with that, we'll take some questions, and we'll kind of start the process here.
Nick, obviously some big news in the division with Darrell Revis being traded yesterday. I'm wondering how closely you guys pay attention to stuff like that, and how it could affect decision making because there's a team you see two times a year.
Sure, you're cognizant of it, and I think you have some degree of understanding, but I think the focus right now is really more on your team, on our team, and just the draft preparation and what we're going to do. So, I mean, Darrell's a great player, there's no question about it. I think the Jets, they'll do what they can to – I mean, they'll put a good team out there. Whoever we end up playing, whoever's on the field, you know, they'll be good players, and we'll have to make sure that we're prepared for that. So, you know, we're going to have to face them, it looks like, actually, at some point in the season when we play Tampa Bay, so it won't be too far from us, so –
Took great care to point out the fact that the front seven was a group that, among the prospects anyway, that really stood out to you. Is there a group this year, a similar position group, or that really stands maybe head and shoulders?
I wouldn't say head and shoulders. I would say there's some groups that there's quite a bit of depth. There's a lot of good, productive players. The secondary, I think, is an area, both the corners and the safety position. I think one of the things that's probably unique about that position, if you've seen a few more players have actually played multiple positions. Some have played safety, some have played corner, some have played the nickel position like the Matt Elam kid. You know, so there's, I'd say, versatile players in the defensive backfield. They're not necessarily confined to one particular spot, which that probably speaks to a little bit of the evolution. You know, you're looking for guys that are versatile, can play multiple spots, and some of those players have played in more passing-oriented divisions and conferences, you know, the SEC with some of the spread offenses and those types of things. So I think there's some depth, and I think there's some versatility at that position. The offensive line is a good group. I mean, there's some good players in that group, you know, and there's a fair amount of receivers, I would say, that are in the group as well. So I would say every year, you know, we talk about the same thing. There's going to be more players at certain positions relative to others. That's just the way it goes. And, you know, you don't necessarily evaluate the players any differently than you do on a year-to-year basis.
Nick, you guys
have 5 draft picks. You've talked in the past when you've had more about the flexibility that you have when you have more. With so few picks, do you go into this draft sort of with the mindset of let's try to create some more flexibility for ourselves?
I think that sort of materializes in and of itself. Like even going to the draft last year, you know, we really hadn't had any substantive discussions about moving up or moving down. It just kind of happened to materialize once we're in the draft room and once we were on the phone. So could that happen, you know, when we get to the draft Thursday night? Possibly. But if we don't, if we have 5 picks, we have 5 picks. So, you know, we'll take it as it comes. So I don't think it changes our philosophy. We're going to know the board top to bottom like we do every year. And if there's an opportunity that presents itself that makes sense, then we'll consider it. If not, I think you always have to be prepared to pick regardless of how many picks that you have.
Would you like more picks?
I mean, we'll take whatever we can get. However we get them, we'll take them. So if we end up with 5, we end up with 5. We get more, we get more. So
sometimes, you know, you get 5, you got to be prepared to make them. How often does that happen where you just get stuck, you know, where like maybe you want to move, but you can't because there's not no one to move with?
Sure. I think when you go into the draft, you know, going into it, okay, you have X amount of selections that you're going to make, and you have to be prepared every time your name comes up. And that's just that doesn't change from 1 year to the next. So however many picks you have, you make the pick. And if there's an opportunity that's out there that makes sense for you to move either way, then you consider if that's the best thing for ourselves at the time, then we'll do it.
Nick, I've heard a lot of people say that there's depth, maybe not the elite at the top, but you know it's kind of even across the board, and maybe the 5th pick's not going to be that different from the 25th, or 15th won't be that different from the 35th. Does that dynamic maybe make it a little less predictable when you guys are trying to forecast what's going to happen in front of you?
I'd say on a year-to-year basis, the top of the draft is, you know, there's a handful of guys that are pretty certain. And then really after that, I mean, they could come off the board in any number of different ways. So I don't think anything really surprises you anymore this time, you know, this when you get to this point. So I'd say this year really isn't any different than any other years, at least from our perspective. I mean, that's just that our belief and our opinion. There's a lot of good football players that you're going to be able to find early, late, after the draft, you know, so they're out there. You just have to find them, and you have to make the pick. In the end, you have to take players that you feel fit your team the best, and if you like the player, then you pick the player, so wherever that is.
You're drafting as low as you guys have typically drafted, being down there in the 20s. How much time do you spend trying to forecast what's going to happen in front of you, or is that a waste of time?
It's difficult, but you know that let's just say we stay at 29, there's going to be 28 players that are going to come off the board. You know, how are they going to come off the board? It's kind of hard to tell. You may have some degree of knowledge, or you may have a feel one way or another of what a team may be looking at based on your research and analysis, you know, going through a team by team, kind of our needs analysis. So, but where we're picking, it's just hard to say, okay, these 28 players, they're going to be gone when we pick. I mean, that's a little bit of a dice roll. Now, if it works out that way, then so be it. But I would say, by and large, it probably doesn't.
You guys are always looking for good players, obviously. But when a guy is a captain, how much does that figure into his maybe resume in your overall approach when it comes to evaluating?
It's just part of their profile. I mean, sometimes it's captain-elect by the team, sometimes captain-elect by the coaches. But, I mean, I think in the end, you're just trying to look at the entire profile and the player's body of work, you know, his performance on the field, his character, his intangibles, his makeup, those types of things. So, you know, it speaks to the player, obviously, that they've done something right in their career and the players think highly of them, their coaches think highly of them. So, you know, you take that into consideration, but it's just a part of the broader picture that you're trying to establish on the player.
When there's only, with only the 5 picks in other years, we've had 10, 12, do you look at the undrafted free agent situation any differently? Is there a different element of roster management that you have to have leading into the weekend? Does it tie in, the number of draft picks that you have and the number of undrafted free agents you're looking to sign?
Sure. Rookie free agents always play a big role in the draft. You know, if you just look at our track record through the years, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, Dane Fletcher, Justin Francis, Marcus Forston, you know, those Brandon Bolden, those guys last year. So they're always a part of the equation. Just from a sheer numbers standpoint, the roster is right around, you know, let's call it 70 players, give or take. So we're going to be adding 20 more players to the team before we go to training camp. So that could come from draft picks. It could come from undrafted free agents. So whether or not they play a larger role this year, possibly. You could all, there there are still free agents or street free agents that are available. So you're always looking at a multitude of ways to put your team together, and then we'll take 90 to training camp, and then we'll go from there.
Nick, could you just talk a little bit about, I'm curious, when a football team plays a bad game, they go back, look at the tape, and try to fix the mistakes. How do you fix recent or previous draft mistakes? You don't go back and look at the tape. How do you try to correct that and avoid those happening in the future?
I think really as a team, we look at everything that we do on the field, off the field, strength and conditioning, draft, et cetera. So we're always trying to find ways to improve our systems and make them better, whatever it may be. So, you know, I would say an organizational just philosophy of always trying to improve, always trying to get better in the name of trying to win games. Because the most important thing, it's about winning games. So whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's undrafted free agency, whatever it may be, the most important thing is about winning games. So however we can figure out a way to help us win more games, then that's what we'll do.
Traditionally, you guys have spoken about the college passing game being a little primitive by comparison to the NFL game. Does the spread offense keep it at a primitive level, or does it make it a little bit more sophisticated so that you're finding guys are a little more polished? Or are you guys kind of maybe going closer to what they're doing, just trying to figure out?
I think it depends on the system, because each team kind of employs it differently. The pace has definitely come into play at the collegiate level. Now, that could also simplify some things, because some teams say, okay, we have a menu of plays 1 through 10, and essentially, like, they have to memorize them. So it's one word means one thing. It kind of tells everybody what to do. Or we've talked to some players where they look to the sideline, and there's five coaches signaling to the players, one for each position. So, okay, one player's looking at this coach, another player's looking at that coach. So they're focused on one thing only, and kind of – so I think you have to look at the system, and then I think you have to do your research and just look at a variety of different things, just how – you know, to what extent, how the schematic, how complicated it may or may not be, the terminology that's involved, what they're asking of that player. So – it's not necessarily the spread and passing oriented. I think it's really system specific and what they ask those players to do. And then you have to make a determination, okay, how is that going to translate or not translate? Or we're starting at point A, and this is what we have to do in order to get into point B, or this player is a little bit further along. So that's where you sort of have to do your own homework and then make that declaration of, okay, here's what we think moving forward.
Some of the Pac-12 teams, Cal, USC, are they a little bit more pro style? They have a couple wide receivers there, Robert Woods, Keenan Allen. Just trying to figure if they would be further along.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at just the Cal program, I mean, Coach Tutford has been a great coach for a number of years, and, you know, they run a pretty sophisticated offense, and they ask those players to do a number of things. You know, Coach Kiffin has an NFL background, and, you know, he's implemented some of those philosophies into his offensive. So, you know, I think you have to look at it on a team-by-team relative basis. And then in the end, though, you still have to do your own homework and see, okay, well, here's what they were asked to do. Okay, maybe we're going to ask them to do that. Okay, well, here's what we're going to ask them to do. How are they going to be able to execute that? Are they going to be able to retain it? They're going to be able to learn, et cetera.
Nick, it's now the third year of the three-day draft process. How do you feel about it, and do you feel you've gotten acclimated to it?
Yeah, I mean, we're prepared, like, if they told us it's one day, it's one, and then we'll be prepared for one day. So, you know, you just makes for longer nights, I guess, at least Thursday, Friday night. But, you know, it gives you some time to come in the next morning, kind of see what's left, go through some of your cleanup work, and then, you know, we're prepared whenever it is. So whatever time they tell us to be there, we'll be there.
What's your wish list in terms of needs? Maybe like top three?
I mean, I think our wish list is to improve the team. Like, that's the bottom line. Like I said, it all goes back to whatever we need to do to help the team win games, then that's what we'll do. So we're going to add players that we feel can help us win. That's what we're going to try to do.
How difficult or challenging is the debate where if you're a 29, let's say the 10th overall player on your board slips down, but the 22nd overall player is also there and fits more of a pressing need? And how do you go about weighing those two options there? I know it's a hypothetical, but I'm sure similar things happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to look at how the players come off, and we'll go through. We've stacked it horizontally and vertically. So we've done the vertical stack, which is by position. Then you start to work across. So then you just kind of look at it in relative terms. And then really you just have to make a determination. And you can only pick one player. So, you know, there's a lot of things that I would say come into play short term, long term. So, I mean, you pick the player that you feel is best for your team, and that's what you do.
Nick,
Nick, being 3 days out from the draft, will you guys still go on the road maybe these last couple days?
We have. I mean, that's something that I've done personally. You know, we have some coaches that may or may not be doing that. And it's just, we're just trying to make sure that there's no loose ends that are out there. So, like I said, we talked about this last year. I went the day before the draft. I can't remember the year it was, and worked the player out. So it's just another exposure that you can have. Maybe there's something that's just dangling out there that you're uncertain of. And, well, you can go see the players up until the draft. Like, you can go out there Thursday morning and work the guy out if they're willing to do it. So.
Who have been some guys that have maybe been last-minute visits and turned out being panned out well for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think we spent a lot of time in the spring working on a number of players. I mean, it's a significant amount of players. So, I mean, and the reason we do it is because we feel that it's time well spent. We're going to invest the time, and we feel it's worthwhile. So, I mean, I wouldn't say there's anybody, one player in particular. I mean, we work out a lot of players, and we're just trying to make sure, though, in the end, we get it right, and this way we can make the right decision for our team.
Go ahead, Paul.
Now, has your role on a personal level changed much this year from previous years, specifically with the contract situation?
Sure. I mean, I think everybody understands what their job and what their role is organizationally. I would say that, you know, over the past few years, my role really hasn't changed all that much. So, I mean, whatever everybody's asked to do, you know, everybody does their job and tries to do it to the best of their ability.
Let's take two more. Nick, given the different avenues of player acquisition, agency, undrafted free agents, draft, CFL. We all enjoy this. You guys spend a lot of time in it, but do we sometimes, depending upon the year, overstate the vital importance of the draft?
I think the draft is a part of the process. I mean, really, the team-building exercise, it kind of never stops. It's ongoing. It's just specific to one segment of the year. So, most of the time, free agency comes before the draft. We had one instance where it didn't. So the team building process is nonstop. It's ongoing. And once we get post-draft, you know, even be a period during training camp, like Rob Ninkovich, just to pick a name, you know. So I think we signed him the first week of August in 2009 in training camp. And, you know, Rob's ended up being one of the better players that we've had in our program. So it's constantly, it's ongoing. It really never stops. And in the end, the most important thing is to try to do whatever we can to help our team win games. So whatever shape that takes, then that's what we'll do.
What the spread offense has done to scouting offensive players, does it change the way what you got to look for in defensive players too? Because you're seeing it in the NFL now with Kaepernick and Wilson, and maybe what Philly's going to do this year.
I think what you're finding in college is they're taking. We've talked to a number of players that they're playing defensive line now or even linebacker that they were a defensive back or they played corner in high school and they were recruited as an athlete. So the overall speed and athleticism, I'd say, is, you know, taking on sort of a life of its own. But, I mean, if you look at, you know, a program like Alabama, I mean, they're big, strong, physical, tough. I mean, they run the football, and they've been pretty successful here the past few years. So, you know, the players have been asked to do some different things. I mean, even offensively, just going back to that real quick, I mean, sometimes you never see an offensive lineman literally put his hand down in a three-point stance. So the only way you can figure out, like, whether or not he can actually do it is to go work the guy out and see if he can bend his knees, see if he can actually come out of a stance. I mean, 90% of the guy's plays, the guy's there in a two-point stance, and he's trying to run block, down block, you know, out of a two-point stance. Is that the most effective way to do it? So, I mean, it works both ways. I mean, it works both ways, just offensive players and defensive players. But you've seen what teams have done. They've taken some players that have played other positions and kind of bulked them up a little bit and let them put their hand down, at least on the front seven, and let them – rush the passer or chase the ball or use their athleticism and use their speed. All right. Thanks.